Our next speaker is Dr. Laura Smith, who has a background as a physical therapist also, and she's going to talk to us about pain in post-polio, an important topic, addressing causes versus treating effects.
Pain with interfering with work, activity, and the quality of life, and which has persisted for months or years, is a major problem for persons experiencing the late effects of poliomyelitis, as has been discussed here already. In a series of 114 post-polios seen in an outpatient clinic, 102, or 90%, reported pain as a chief complaint. Those patients who were ambulatory reported a high incidence of back and hip pain and diffuse muscle pain in the lower extremities. Those using wheelchairs and crutches reported neck and back pain and injuries to the upper extremities. The correct number on this slide is 35 rather than the 25 that is up there. Most of the subjects describe having used several treatment measures, such as medications, rest, heat, or exercise, with only temporary relief of pain at best. Our pain management program has been directed toward correcting the causes of pain and is focused on restoring skeletal alignment, reducing energy expenditure for the task, and providing assistance to muscles which are working at abnormally high levels of their capacity. The pain stems from the fact that the body has an extraordinary ability to maintain function in the presence of muscle weakness and skeletal abnormalities. The body does so, however, at the biological price of increasing energy expenditure for the task, placing excessive and abnormal forces on joint structures, and requiring increasing work from innervated muscles. Such compensations over the years leads to overstretched muscles, degenerative joint changes, and decompensation of weakened muscles. Abnormal sitting alignment in this group was extensive. Absent or reversed lumbar curves, marked forward head, forward shoulder positions, asymmetric pelvic levels, and obvious scoliosis. The most common abnormal sitting position was that of slump sitting and forward head, with the weight of the trunk hanging from the posterior vertebral ligaments and the lumbar spine in a fully stretched position, eventually leading to microtrauma and pain. Standing is described by many post-polios as causing severe pain as they wait in lines, stand at work, or at cocktail parties. The post-polio with lower extremity involvement is limited to a few stereotyped standing postures, often accompanied by abnormalities of alignment. In this series, the absent lumbar curve was continued in standing. Asymmetry of the pelvic base increased from 19 to 40 persons, and 38% of the ambulators stood on their stronger leg. Now, this is a feat requiring continuous and relatively high-level contractions of innervated muscles. 43% of the subjects in this series demonstrated major lateral oscillations in gait, and over 50% walked with a forward lean at the hips and trunk. That is, they're looking down more towards the floor. The abnormal lateral oscillations of the trunk produce excessive forces on the back or knee, as shown on the left in this subject with hip abductor muscle weakness, and then on the right, improved with the use of a cane. The forward lean is needed to prevent the knee from buckling or to watch the floor and feet to avoid tripping and falling. The beginnings of this posture can be seen in the young boy with dorsiflexor muscle weakness and incorporated into the walking posture of the adult with dorsiflexion weakness and quadriceps muscle weakness. Although the forward lean is slight, as you see compared to the normal subject, and of course every time you take somebody's picture, they stand up straighter than they ordinarily would, so we always have that problem. The position requires continuous contraction of the lumbar erector spinae muscles. This compresses capillary beds and limits exchange between capillaries and the working muscle fibers. Institution of preventive and corrective measures to relieve pain requires use of mechanical or orthotic assistance and lifestyle modifications. We begin with mechanical correction of sitting postures to restore symmetry and to restore the lumbar curve, since pain relief can be demonstrated in the initial evaluation using lumbar rolls or wheelchair back supports, properly fitting chairs, corsets if there is major trunk weakness, or introduction of the Swedish balance chair. We evaluate sitting and seating as these occur over hours per day, at meals, at desks, in meetings, in automobiles, in wheelchairs, and during social activities, and we make recommendations for proper overall seating. The objectives for decreasing pain in standing and walking are to correct asymmetrical alignment and leg length discrepancies using heel lifts and shoe inserts, which are hardly noticeable as compared to the old total shoe elevations. Bilateral weight-bearing capacity is restored again by heel lifts, correcting the current orthoses or applying a below-the-knee orthoses, which controls both the knee and the ankle. Minimizing abnormal gait deviations and assisting weak muscles can be achieved using shoe modifications such as the cowboy boot, Swedish clogs, the spring wire dorsiflexion assist, sports shoes, or if necessary, a below-the-knee metal orthoses. The gait of many post-polios can be improved markedly with shoe modifications such as the positive heels or the rocker bottom soles. To reduce lateral trunk deviations, a cane or forearm crutch may be recommended. Erect posture in walking is gained by removing the need to watch the floor. We use boots or athletic supports for ankle stability, the spring wire dorsiflexion assist to prevent tripping, or a below-the-knee orthosis with an anterior stop, which closely simulates normal knee and ankle motions. Painful motions at the knee, ankle, and hip can be controlled using this orthosis, the new athletic braces, this orthosis or the new athletic braces. In a few instances of painful genu recurvatum, we have needed to apply a long leg brace. Examples of use of orthotic assists include this young woman whose painful ligamentous instabilities had limited, her walking and standing to transferring from her wheelchair to car or to bed. Use of athletic ankle supports, modification of the Lenox Hill brace designed for football players, and a cane permitted functional standing and walking with vigor. This lady has left dorsiflexor and quadriceps muscle weakness. She walked with a drop foot gait and a forward lean. She was watching the floor. She carefully watched the floor and informed me that she was not about to change. Her back and hip pain of a year disappeared after 3 days of use of this spring drop foot assist. She now walks erect with a more normal gait pattern and again with exuberance and well-being. The upper extremity injuries and pain of the long-term crutch walker and user of the manual wheelchair are more difficult to alleviate. Mechanical recommendations include use of alternative types of crutches to alter forces on the upper extremities, hand grips to distribute pressure and restore a more normal wrist position, use of lower extremity orthoses to take some of the weight bearing, and consideration of motorized transportation for long-distance locomotion. A major part of the program includes recommendations to decrease non-essential physical activity, weight reduction, use of energy conservation techniques and environmental modifications, treatment of inflammatory processes, provision for immediate pain relief and control. For example, old surgical sites are sometimes sources of intractable pain. Pain control frequently can be attained by use of local cold, TENS, and relaxation techniques. Throughout the program, emphasis is on cosmesis, current technology, and modern comforts to decrease pain and to increase function. This preventive and corrective pain management program requires active participation of the post-polio. It is not easy. Success of the program requires identification of medical, social, and physical issues, a cohesive team management philosophy, biomechanical and physiological evaluation of the causes of pain, demonstrated ability to provocate or to relieve the pain and to increase function, extensive patient education as to the pathophysiology of acute polio, the recovery process, and the effects of years of compensation, provisions of options and alternative means for controlling pain, and time for processing and decision-making with our support of their decisions. Relief of pain in post-polio is not difficult, but it is a never-ending process. Correcting the cause of pain in post-polio can be accomplished with a comprehensive program, and it is indeed a challenge for all. Thank you.
Johnson. Again, I noticed that you didn't mention two of the things that, or at least two of the things that we see as a common cause of pain, and if one didn't recognize that they were present in post-polios among other people, they might lose the battle, and that is we see, to give you an example, a minimum of two, but usually six patients per week. And in the last 3 months, we've had two people complaining of pain in lower extremity who had lumbar stenosis. One of them played football before he got to polio. I think that was one of the causes. And then we saw six people with upper extremity pain who had radiculopathies. It bothers me that we don't think of pain as a signal, that there's something wrong, and look for the cause, as you mentioned at the end. Because I think it's wrong to just look for mechanical causes of what appears to be structural abnormalities causing pain that could be correctable and more severe. One last comment was, I don't think you emphasized enough that the body seeks economy of movement. That's almost like the law of gravity. In other words, people walk the way it takes the least energy, and so one has to be careful about interposing orthotic devices and one thing another that may increase the expenditure.
I would agree totally with you on all points. As far as radiculopathies, yes, we've seen those, and we've seen stenosis. Many other types of pain problems, because of the brevity of the time, I only addressed here the postural causes on that. But we certainly don't try to treat radiculopathies as postural problems or injuries in that manner. As far as energy expenditure, and the body, the body does seek to do things in the most energy efficient manner. However, if there is any abnormality of gait, be it muscle weakness or skeletal malalignment, there is going to be increased energy expenditure for the task. So we certainly don't want to increase energy expenditure with an orthosis. Most of the time we feel that we decrease energy expenditure, that there's more energy expenditure without the orthosis. Otherwise, we wouldn't apply them.
Feldman, Edmonton, Alberta. I would just like to make a comment relative to that. We found frequently the need to change metal orthoses to plastic ones, polypropylene ones, in order to reduce the amount of weight that is being transported around by the limb, given that these patients also have weakness and fatigue. And that in itself sometimes is very, very beneficial.
We have not found that the advantages of the plastic orthoses outweigh many of their disadvantages. In weight of a plastic orthosis, the only time weight is a factor is during the swing phase of gait, which is a relatively low energy phase of gait compared to the stance phase. In the stance phase, we usually need more stability or different types of stability that can be afforded by the plastic orthoses.
I had 2 points. One, I'd like to comment.
Your name?
Oh, yeah. Jacqueline Perry from Rancho. I think we ought to qualify what Ernie Johnson just said. There's no doubt that the body seeks the most efficient situation for the circumstance at the moment. And if the circumstance is very inefficient, we can improve the efficiency both ways. And we've measured, done the energy cost with and without equipment. And very often we use that as a selling point to the patient who doesn't like the cosmesis and they feel the difference. The other point I'd like to comment just in reference to the last statement, and I was extremely glad to see that you used the double ankle AFO, because if the attempt to replace that with plastic in order to get the rigidity for dorsiflexion stop, you also give them an increased demand at initial contact, which is devastating to the quadriceps. I had one question, though, and I was wondering why you used the spring joint rather than a very thin plastic shell, which I think is more cosmetic and more durable.
The thin plastic shells over the spring drop foot, probably because we haven't been able to get the thin plastic shells. And we have only been able to obtain the more rigid ones. And so that's put us into trouble. I mean, the rigid ones are light, but they take away motion compared to the spring drop foot brace. And the spring drop foot brace is equally light, does not remove any motion, it only assists.
Peter Gower, New Zealand. Two comments. One, the energy law probably applies only if there's not pain, and my experience as a rheumatologist is that people will use maneuvers to avoid pain rather than the energy. The second thing is, I think it would be interesting to look at the Mayo Clinic cohort to see, in fact, whether it's the structural abnormality which differs between the post-polios and the non the people without complaints, or whether it's a problem of pain amplification, which will lead to soft tissue rheumatism, and which has been shown by Smythe to be related to disturbed sleep, which may give you a unifying hypothesis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
This is the end of tape 4 and concludes this portion of the program.
Yeah.